Time to pop an anti-aging pill. This is a Cosmos magazine, The Science of Everything, from winter 2017, an article by Elizabeth Finkel, and I'm reading it as part of Peter Hill Explains, as part of my cardiac rehab, to actually read and communicate very long. So I'll try not to comment too much on this, and just read it to you to see what it's like. The byline, it's no longer snake oil. Scientists have a pipeline full of promising anti-aging compounds just waiting for human trials, Elizabeth Finkel reports. Like this magazine. Here's the headline to it. I need to last longer, the professor tells me. He lets my quizzical look hang for a moment, then quickly explains, I'm on my second marriage and my wife is expecting twins. If that means. Okay. Yeah. Soon to be so, the respected head of an Australian medical institute is contemplating the latest offering from the anti-aging industry. It's a product that tops up the levels of nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide, NAD, star, whatever it means. That's a real hard one to do. It'd be interesting to look at that compound. Sorry, that's my comment. A complex chemical made by our bodies that is crucial for our metabolism. He's not alone. Leonard Garnett, a professor of Massachusetts Institute of Technology, has been taking NAD boosters for years, and 2015 started a company, Esalim, to market them. They are likely thousands of users by now. Even NASA has been seduced. It hopes that NAD to repair the DNA of astronauts bombarded by cosmic rays during the year-long trip to Mars. DNA damage is one of the factors linked to aging. Yeah, I'm always suspicious when people say the Department of Education wants you to do this, NASA wants to do that, but let's go on. Something has changed in the anti-aging field. Eccentrics and gullible types have always availed themselves of anti-aging remedies. Dubious supplements from ginkgo to hormones feed a mushrooming $30 billion industry. But the evidence-clamoring scientists start popping a pill, you sit up and take notice. Like the soon-to-be 50 Australian professor, most aren't aiming to extend their lifespan, they're aiming to extend their health span, the period of time before diseases of aging can catch up with them. Heart disease, arthritis, cancer, kidney disease and dementia. This seal of approval from scientifically literate customers reflects the revolution in science of aging. 30 years ago, there was none. Most scientific thinking held that aging was not amenable to tweaking. No more than preventing wear and tear on your car. Yet animals do age at different rates. Lab rats live for 3 years, but a mole rat for 40 years. Rather a random process of degradation, this surely suggests some underlying program, one that might be hacked. I actually do like the extra structure of this article. In the late 1980s, scientists proved that was indeed the case, at least in yeast and roundworms. They tinkered with the genes of these creatures and extended the lifespans and health spans. In the cases of roundworms, the lifespan could be doubled by altering a single gene. Suddenly, science had levers to push, and in a compelling demonstration of how the fundamentals are conserved through evolution, the same genetic levers were identified in mice and humans. But altering the genes of humans is not on the cards. So for more than a decade now, researchers have searched for drugs to tweak those same genes. NAD boosters have now become the party favourite, in part because they're not drugs, they're natural products that restore the body's chemistry to a more youthful state. By age 50, NAD levels are half what they were at 20. On top of the NAD levels of an elderly mouse, and their muscles become like those of a youngster. Their stem cells get more oomph and they live longer. So some scientists finally found the fountain of youth. So have scientists finally found the fountain of youth? And if it's good enough for the scientists, should the rest of us start taking Nad's supplements? I feel a bit like a character from Morpheus in the movie The Matrix, in the scene where he offers Neo either a blue pill or a red pill. If you take the blue pill, your story ends. You wake up in bed and you believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. I had a similar experience in researching this story. Some researchers I interviewed were the blue pill camp. They felt we probably know enough about aging to intervene. Others were the red pill types. The rabbit hole was too deep. They didn't think we knew enough to start intervening. So I'll give you the Morpheus choice here. That's a really interesting story. It's beautifully put together. The blue pill. Trapping the Fountain of Youth. The reason for some serious scientists are taking NAD supplements is because a series of epiphanies which have erected a glittering scientific edifice on what was just 3 decades ago was just a swampy backwater. Just about every university now has a Department of Aging Research. It's not just academic institutes. Google entered this space in 2015 with its secretive subsidy Calico, which brings big data to bear on the problem. Craig Venter, who pioneered reading of the human genome, started the company Human Longevity to decode the genes for long life. California based Alkest is mining the regenerative factors of useful blood, and there's plenty more variations of the theme startups such as Progenetics and Unity. But roll back 30 years and study aging was career suicide for any serious scientist. Meanwhile, at the other end of the biological spectrum, the scientists of embryo development was booming. Just how the mush of an egg turned into the embryo had long been biology's greatest mystery. By the late 1980s, researchers had uncovered genetic programs that ran the process in everything from roundworms to human beings. These lessons from embryos could help propel the study of aging into the mainstream. Lesson number one was the fundamentals of biology are preserved across the species. In late 1980s, Cynthia Keenan was compelled by this lesson. She was 30-something, slim blonde, possessed exceptional youthful features and an infectious enthusiasm for science. Her model organism was the 1 millimeter long, 959 cell strong roundworm. Wow. The Canohalbulus elegans. Keenan was struck by the very obvious aging. In 2 weeks, it went from an agile slitherer to a decrepit creature barely able to drag itself across the culture dish. She felt sorry for the worms and was also intrigued. Perhaps, like development, aging was also a process under some sort of control. She set out to see if tweaking genes by bombarding the worms with mutagenic chemicals might affect the lifespan. Her hunch was rewarded by a remarkable mutant. At 4 weeks of age, it was still slithering like a teenager. Tweaking a single gene more than doubled its lifespan. That's interesting. It's also interesting it's a set number of cells. In 1993, Keaton published a paper in Nature revealing the identity of the gene as DAF2, which may not mean all that much to you, but there was a revelation lurking behind the name. One of the big lessons in the 1980s was that genes don't change all that much during evolution. They acquire some code changes and get repurposed, but it's still possible to recognize them. Sort of like a way words change in language, you can pick out the ancient Greek roots. So it was surprising that mammals turned out to have two genes that resemble DAF2. The surprise lay with the job description. In humans, the counterparts of the worm's life extension gene are the insulin receptor genes And its close relative, the ancient light growth factor 1 receptor gene, IGFIR. To understand why this was such a revelation, you need to know a couple of things. So it's very well structured. You've got green pill, blue pill, and going through this person. Insulin's job is to mobilize the body to respond to food intake, like a warehouse overseas is receiving a stock delivery. The hormone is released into the blood to ensure many systems are quickly mobilized. The insulin receptor conveys the signal to body tissues so nutrients are used and needed or stored as fat. Roundworms showed that the signal about food availability also had a link to aging. Even before the worm discovery, we knew that. Back in the Great Depression in 1930, many people went hungry. Wondering about the effect on the growth and long-term health, Cornell University nutritionist Clive McKay set up a rat experiment to mimic the calorie restriction. To his surprise, the rats, so long as they received adequate nutrients, actually lived longer. The experiment has been repeated in yeast. I can't really. I've got a diet, guys. Oh God. Flies, mice, worms, primates. The rough rule of thumb: restrict calorie intake by 30% and see up to a 30% increase in lifespan. Well, that's going to be rather hard. 130. The effects are smaller in mice and even smaller in primates, alright. Not many people have the willpower to adhere to a lifelong diet, although occasional fasting, mimicking diets developed by Walter Longo of the University of Southern California seem to have beneficial effect. Nevertheless, the holy grail has been to find a drug that could mimic fasting. Keaton identified that the DAF2 gene provided an entry point into the circuit linking food intake with life extension. In the following years, she and others teased out more key components. Research showed the same component played a role in aging of different species. Long-lived dogs and long-lived people showed evidence of tweaks of the IGF-R gene, another gene tweaked that doubled a worm's lifespan. DAF16 turned up in long-lived men. They were more likely to carry a particular variation in the gene called FOXO-A-31, which harbored within the recognizable code of DF19. Now, just a little side on genes, you've got exons and introns, and I think it's, you've got the pre-code of the gene to say how it's going to be expressed. You get the start of the gene, and the gene doesn't go all the way. It's got these blanks of rubbish in them, and when it goes out to the RNA, the introns get thrown out. So that's an interesting aspect to it. Another entry point into the aging circuitry came from the yeast Saccharomyces crevisolae. It might seem absurd to go looking for secrets of aging in a single-celled yeast, but the cell resembles one of our own that has multiple chromosomes housed in the nucleus. Remarkably, the yeast also possesses many recognizable features of aging. A single yeast cell will eventually age and die after a couple of days. If coaxed to a bud of daughters, it will undergo a kind of menopause, spawning so many young daughter cells and no more. It demonstrates universal features of aging, deprive yeast of calories, and it lives longer. Just as roundworms, it's interesting because you mentioned that basically live long enough to survive a food dirge. Okay. Just as the roundworms, the search for mutants delivered. In 2000, Leonard Granat's lab in MIT found yeast mutants continued to spawn for about 30% longer than norm. The gene responsible was SIR2. It was a completely different component to the aging circuit to anything unearthed in the worm. I like unearthed the worm. It made parts of the DNA code inaccessible or silent. The prefix SIR stands for Silent Information Regulator. Well, that's interesting. So this is talking about the gene. It's actually quite a complicated thing. So the gene as drawn in the school books, in its one chunk, is for very primitive cells, for bacteria and stuff like that. Okay. Sirtins work by increasing the stickiness of the histone proteins that wrap up the DNA. So That's interesting. So there's histones. These are those little circular balls which the DNA wraps around when it forms up. So there's a series of yo-yos, histones, or I think they're called nucleotomes. They're chucked out by the body, and they're injected into the cells. The DNA automatically spirals up, and the DNA repels each other. So the DNA strands. This is me talking. DNA strands repel each other. So if you imagine they're like wool, but the wool is repulsive to each other. So you put a wool in your drawer, the wool will take up the whole drawer because it will repel each other. If you can imagine that. Worms, fly, mouse, humans all have them. The experience with worms, flies, mouse indicates increasing stirrer activity, mostly extends lifespan. Yeast studies also delivered another windfall. Like other organisms, the yeast lifespan increases when calories are restricted. The yeast doesn't have insulin, GF receptors, and some other genetic components must be responsible for sensing calories. In 2005, researchers found the role played by a curious gene known as the target of rapamycin, or TOR. In animals, the gene is called mTOR. When TOR gene senses low levels of calorie, it responds by slowing down the protein synthesis. It also stimulates recycling of a cell's component, a process known as autophagy. That's interesting. It's a new thing I've looked at, that cells eat themselves. There you go. It also makes sense. Calorie restriction flips the metabolic switch from abundance to austerity. Like when you get a big salary cut, you don't go adding extensions to your house. You hunker down, live modestly, recycle your old things, and delay your plans to have babies. Somehow, responding to stresses also lengthens the lifespan. Well, that's brilliantly written, really nicely written. I like the way they've written it. The day's researchers think autophagy plays a big part in lengthening. For instance, Walter Longo's recent studies of mice and humans show that fasting accelerates refurbishing of tissues, clearing away damaged sentient cells while turning on renewing stem cells. So essentially, going with without a calorie restriction means that you start to eat your old self. Brilliant idea. The name target of rapamycin is an accident of history. Rapamycin was discovered in a bacterium that grows in soils at Rapa Nui. I like it. Better known as Easter Island, rapamycin's ability to flip the TOR levels makes its a drug with profound effects. Until now, its major medical use has been to stop the rejection of foreign tissues and transplant parents by toning down their immune system. But it's destined for greater things. In early 2000s, the science of aging was buzzing. Worms and yeast provided the threads that researchers followed to reveal an entire circuitry of aging. In lab animals, these components could be tweaked to increase lifespan, but that involved altering genes, not possible for humans. Could chemicals achieve the same hack? Sydney-born David Sinclair had into Sydney-born David Sinclair. He had long been compelled by the lessons of aging learnt from yeast. In 1997, at Lenny Gannett's lab, he found a mutant yeast that aged faster. A faulty SGS1 was related to causing the Wiener's syndrome, just like the yeast affected people age faster. But it was the yeast SIR2 gene that captivated him. It appeared to be a leveler that flipped during calorie restrictions. Perhaps chemicals could do the same thing. In 2003, he hit pay dirt with a plant-derived compound called resveratrol. Everyone's delight, he found it in red wine. Though you don't have to imbibe liters to get an active dose. Soon after, he spun off a company called Sertris to commercialize the compound of resveratrol. It was bought by GlaxoSmithKline in 2008. Sinclair now heads a lab at the University of New South Wales And the Harvard Medical School says that GSK has a whole stable of sertraline-activating compounds in testing, some of which are 1,000 times stronger than resveratrol. His attention, in any event, has shifted to NAD. The chemical has been hiding in plain sight since 2000, when sertralines were identified as an anti-aging lever in yeast. It was clear NAD acted like a grease for sertraline mechanism. Since the discovery some 100 years earlier in a yeast cofactor that simulated fermentation, NAD has been found to grease a multitude of metabolic reactions, but few thought it offered potential treatment. It was, Sinclair put it, the most boring molecule in biochemistry. Well, I'll have to look at what NAD is. Now it could be raising levels to such commonplace substance that can have an effect. Generally, these biochemical molecules are so big you can't tour them. Furthermore, it was not clear to raise its how to raise its levels. NAD itself is very unstable and can actually get inside and can't actually get inside the cells where it's needed. Two things changed the game. One was researchers discovered NAD levels decline with age, but are raised by calorie restriction and exercise. Wow! The other was identifying several natural precursors of NAD. Nicotinamide mononucleotide, NMN, and nicotinamide riboside, NR, that were much more stable and could enter cells, raise NAD levels when given to animals. Well, you want to take that? It's not NAD. Jonathan Antwick's laboratory at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Lausanne showed in 2016 that NR boosted the multiplication of skin, brain, and muscle cells, or stem cells, and slightly increased the longevity of mice, even when given in middle age. Sinclair's lab showed in 2013 that mice treated with MNM boosters had improved muscle strength. And early this year, mice treated with NMN had a superior ability to repair DNA, the reason NASA is now engaged with talks at Sinclair's lab. One wonders what that is. It's someone just phoned up from NASA's PR. As well as astronauts, children have undergone radiation therapy and cancer might also benefit from the treatment. Sinclair is planning clinical trials using NMN or a closely related compound. You'd put mice in radiation first before you children. What's missing is a proper controlled trial to see if NAD boosters do actually anything to forestall human aging. Getting a trial off the ground for any multi-aging compound turns out to be extremely difficult. You can imagine why. Which brings us back to NAD's boosters. The excitement is that NAD boosters are not drugs, so you don't have to wait. There are companies willing to oblige providing NR supplements such as Groton's startup Elysium. It has some cred, no less than 5 Nobel Prize winners on the advisory board. Wow, you'd think they'd want to have them on the advisory board. In lieu of a trial, Groton says the company will follow up results with clients over time. There's concerns as to whether NAD levels truly raised by supplement, but for it's worth having a Google and you find anecdotal testimonies from people saying they feel it's peppier for taking it. Wow. Okay, it's in some science magazine. So what do you do? Just because something is a natural compound doesn't guarantee that boosting its level in middle age is a safe thing to do. As Sinclair reported in his recent conference in Sydney, NMN is not only help aging mice develop stronger muscles, it also triggered the growth of tiny blood vessels. That might flag a risk since cancer relies on newly formed blood cells to spread. On the other hand, it's pretty clear that what effects of aging are dramatically increased likelihood of developing all sorts of diseases. It depends if you're the punting type, which is not supposed to be. Okay, this is the entire thing of ethics is to remove your choice from it. Remove that thing. Now we've got this brilliant thing, the red pill. The never-ending rabbit hole. You might think, with all the epiphanies of the past 30 years, surely we know enough about aging to go full speed ahead with our interventions. All candidate compounds so far seem to hack into the same pathway, triggering calorie restriction. Well, yes, but the rabbit hole goes very deep. Take calorie restriction, the supposedly ironclad way to trigger lifespan expansion. In fact, studies of mice show very different effects depending on their breed, gender, and even what they're fed. Rafael DeCabo, who runs a long-term calorie restriction study on rhesus monkeys in the US, at the... Damn, imagine your monkey there, you turn up and you say, what? What? I've lost my captivity, I've been inbred, and now I'm not being fed. To help you humans, I'd be pissed off. National Institute of Aging to hold some breeds of mice actually live shorter lifespan when calorie restricted, and females may respond better than males, or vice versa. Nor is it just about calories. Sorry, paleo dieters and high protein diets shorten lifespans in mice. Well, yeah, I suppose mice eat protein. So go figure where you as so. Go figure where you, as an individual endowed with a specific gender and a unique set of genes, fits into all of this. Yep. That's why it's so immoral, the previous stuff. And while it's all very conceptualized, the biology of aging as a circuit, circuits end up controlling something. So what exactly does a circuit control? Over the years, one compelling theory has been that it controls the integrity of mitochondria, the engines of our cells, which clearly degenerate with age. According to one theory, the corrosive byproducts of cellular combustion, free radicals, cause ongoing damage as an inevitable consequence of being alive. But numerous recent experiments show that slowing the generation of free radicals in mice and flies doesn't actually slow the aging process. Aha! In fact, it seems to have the opposite effect. Nowadays, the paradigm shift is that stress signals like those from free radicals, fasting, and exercise trigger an adaptive anti-aging response. Okay, so if you're stressed, your body anti-ages. So if you actually eat anti-aging stuff, your body takes the foot off the accelerator. Fasting or exercise... Okay, it doesn't mean past theories are entirely wrong, as DeCabo says. Nothing has been proving. It's just that there's a lot of other stuff going on in the aging that as well. At least 9 targets appear to be controlled by aging circuitry, ranging from the fraying of telomeres on the tips of chromosomes to epigenetic disturbances that change how the DNA code is read. Kitten's epithemies with worms suggested for a while that tweaking controls the aging might be simple. Indeed, the days it was possible to extend the lifespan of worms tenfold. Oh, these days it is. But mammals are complex. DeCabo offers metaphor of Model T compared to a Tesla. Back in the 20s, you could tune the engine with a few tweaks from a spanner. Good luck for trying that with a Tesla. Luckily, just like today's car mechanics, researchers now have mind-boggling tools to deal with mind-boggling complexity. Yeah, mind-boggling billion things. They can monitor the activity of every gene part of metabolism. Some called omics technologies. This leaves it to machine learning algorithms to figure out what's going on. This sort of big data approach from Google subsidiary Calico is applying biology of aging. The company's chief scientist, Cynthia Keaton... Interesting, because he was there. None of this means the era of anti-aging medicine has to wait for us to explore every blind alley for the rabbit hole. Indeed, the most of the researchers I spoke with passionately believe they are more than ready to start testing a plethora of promising new compounds in their pipelines. What's needed is a faucet at the end. Regulatory framework that will incorporate aging as a medical indication so that people who need to last longer don't have to be the punters. That's a very interesting story overall. So let's, well, we finish it. The 9 cellular hallmarks of aging. Stem cell exhaustion, altered intercellular communication, DNA damage, eroded telomeres, changing epigenetics, protein damage, changes to nutrient sensing, mitochondrial dysfunction, and cellular senescence. Okay, so it's interesting. Well, thanks for listening. That's taken a full 30 minutes for me to read. A beautifully put together article with the red and blue pill. It's beautifully put together in terms of, you know, here's a simple argument. It's like, rather than to actually put that two levels of the article and trying to run it at two levels up and down, she picked one level, the other clearly signaled it, and put it together. Yeah, you do have these things. These people are obviously out to make a fast buck. You can't really, if someone's profiting from selling something, they've almost lost it as a scientist. And I'll just go back here. There's a sub-article inside, again, a brilliant thing, going on trial. So this is, like, the material is really well organized here. So this is a sub-article inside, and it's called Going on Trial. The brave new world of anti-aging medicine has been officially launched when regulatory authorities approve a drug that won't be prescribed for any particular disease. It will be taken to forestall the diseases of aging. The problem is that's not the way the foods, the world's most influential drug operator operates. The FAD's time-honored wisdom is to approve one drug for one disease. In the hope of breaching the barrier, the American Federation of Anti-Aging Research, AFAR, has found a Trojan horse, an old diabetes drug called metformin. It has been used for 60 years to treat early stages of diabetes. In 2014, British researchers reported a startling fringe benefit. Compared with people of similar age in the general population who did not have diabetes, metformin use, even though a little more portly, are less likely to die from a number of diseases. On average, they lived about 15% longer. How does metformin work? Most researchers think the initial strike is aimed at the cell's engine, the mitochondria, specifically at part of its machinery called complex 1. The net effect replicates the milieu created by calorie restriction, raising the ratio of low-energy molecules, AMP, relative to high-energy counterpart, ATP. I know what ATP, I've never heard of AMP before. A low-energy molecule, AMP? I've got to find out what AMP is. I know what adenine triphosphate is, but what is AMP? The changing ratio seems to signal a master switch in enzyme AMPK. That sets many differences in metabolic switches. The liver stops releasing glucose from the stores. The reason for metformin reduces blood sugar for diabetes, while TOR is clamped down in tissues, slowing the protein synthesis. The safety and affordability of metformin has made it the prime choice for the first trial of anti-aging drugs. To that end, the past couple of years, Nira Basile, who is based at the Albert Einstein College in New York, and colleagues at the AFAR have been designing the TAME, Targeting Aging with Metformin trial. Its proposes to enroll 3,000 people aged between 65 and 79 in 14 centres across the US and follow them for 5 years to see how the drug affects the incidence of heart attack and cancer, dementia and death. It would also be a look at the trade-off from the side effects known to include stomach complaints, lactic acidosis, I suppose, a potentially dangerous buildup of lactic acid in the bloodstream. If the trial ends up the way we expect, it should be enough for the FDA to accept aging per se as a treatable indication, Brazili tells me. The trial has been waiting to go ahead for 2 years now. Here's the rub. No drug company will fund this $70 million trial for a cheap off-patent drug. The drug funds through AFAR will cover half. Brazil has been a waiting decision of the National Institute of Health to fund the remainder. Interesting. The second old diabetes drug, Acarbose, is also a candidate for testing as an anti-aging compound. You would think that you could actually slip this in to generic double-blind tests. Like if it does nothing, is this a placebo? The second diabetes drug is also a candidate for testing the anti-aging compound. Still common in China, Acarbose stops the spike in glucose level after a meal by slowing the breakdown of starches. Lowering blood glucose levels seems to be a way of tracking anti-aging mechanism. Evidence that extends life comes from mice. Males get most benefit with 22% expansion of the average lifetime, and females only get 5%. Because undigested starches get to the lower bowel, the side effects include flatulence and diarrhea. The NIH has funded a tiny trial looking at the effects of Acarbose on blood profiles of 10 human subjects. That is a tiny vase. Metformin and Acarbose has been the easiest to get through regularly hoops in terms of scientific promise, though the judge's choice goes to rapamycin. In 2009, rapamycin was the first potential anti-aging compound to be successfully run the gauntlet of intervention testing program run by the National Institute of Aging. It was tested on multiple breeds of mice and 3 independent labs. Rapamycin fed 20-month-old mice, the equivalent of a 6-year-old humans, increased their average lifespan for about 10%. This extraordinary finding shatters the established notion that aging damage was irreversible and any intervention to bring in youth, even with rusted on damage in late middle age, it was apparently not too late to intervene. Yet for all the winning qualities, rapamycin has an unlikely chance of blazing a trail to the first drug to go on trial as an indication of slowing age. This is because its side effects, which include suppressing the immune system, raising blood sugar levels, and triggering cancers, all effects have been seen with high doses in transplant patients. Okay, they have a transplant patient. However, low doses appear to be quite different. In 2014, Novartis tested the effects of low doses of rapamycin on elderly people receiving flu vaccine. This quick treatment boosted their immune response, seemingly opposite effect of high doses given to transplant patients. Worryingly, in mice, though, low doses have the effect of shrinking the testes. God, you can't win, do you? Matt of University of Washington has been testing the effects of rapamycin on a diverse group of pet dogs to get better measures of the benefit versus risk. Dogs are much more like humans than mice. Woof. They live the same cushy lifestyles we do. I wish they did. Not dogs that I know, not any dog I'm going to own. It's not going to live my lifestyle. And suffer the same age-related diseases like us. Their hearts grow weaker with age. To fund trials, Cabot and has had NIH support and philanthropy. Findings are encouraging. In newspapers published in March 2017, in a newspaper, Geroscience, this colleague showed that feeding a low dose of rapamycin to 24 middle-aged dogs for 10 weeks improved the pumping power of their hearts compared to untreated dogs. Particularly, given that the drug is off-patent, it's finding how to carry out costly human trials. Well, it is really interesting that you've got this problem of off-patent. It's very hard, if you've got an innovation-based model, get things off-patent. But, you want to have some very low... low dose stuff. So it'll be very interesting that seems to be so many generic trials out there that you could just have a generic trial system going ahead. This is the entire problem of perfectly healthy people. You could have just perfectly healthy people being continuously tested, and you could have a just have people take random drugs and just measure every aspect of them. Thanks a lot for listening. And I'll catch up with you later.